Welcome to Fireside Chats, Leadership Journeys, brought to you by the Office of Academic Clinical Affairs and hosted by Dr. Carolyn Porta. These chats bring together University of Minnesota Health Sciences students with experts for candid conversation on leadership, career pathways, sources of joy, and strategies to rejuvenate.
Welcome to this Office of Academic Clinical Affairs Fireside Chat with our internship program and with our special guests today. Super excited to have Dr. John Hallberg with us and Ms. Brittany Shrimpton. Where are you from, Brittany? Why don't you get us started?
Yes, I'm from Twin Cities PBS is where I work, Channel 2.
Fabulous. And Dr. Hallberg, give us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, everyone. So John Hallberg, I'm a family physician. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the University of Minnesota Medical School. The biggest hat that I wear a few different hats, but the biggest hat is as a clinician. I'm in clinic seeing patients 5 days a week here, half days. So today, for example, I was here all afternoon seeing patients. I have a new position. I'm now the Crescent Medical Director for M Physicians. So it's kind of a weird title and doesn't mean much to most people, but we have 10 clinics that exist outside of the Fairview relationship. Also, my role is going to be talking to health systems across Minnesota about how we, the University of Minnesota, might work with them. So I have a little bit of an ambassadorial role, which I'm really excited about, and also a little bit of a entrepreneurial role. But I would be remiss, especially in the context of tonight's conversation, if I didn't say that the coolest title I have is I'm the creative director of the Center for the Art of Medicine. And that's why we're actually here tonight, because this is something I don't know if there's too many physicians that or people in general that have a title like creative director in a medical school. And I'm forever grateful for that opportunity. So I'll just leave that to tantalize you a little bit as the conversation unfolds.
Thanks so much. And exactly that. We want to bring in people that have maybe done some things that have been unique and made a choice as to how you're using your time in a way that others have not. Our interns know how precious their time is these days. And frankly, once they're full-time in the workforce, it won't really be all that different. We pick and choose every day how we're going to use our time, and you're choosing to care for patients and you're choosing to also give back in this more creative way, which we look forward to hearing about. Brittany, let me just go back to you for a second. Give us an example of ways that you find joy and perhaps how you're caring for yourself these days.
Oh, that's a great question. One way that I'm caring for myself is, I don't know if anybody else does this, but I get up and do morning pages when I'm on my most successful days. I will not say that I do them every day, but it's three pages of stream of consciousness writing that came out of a creative practice of Julia Cameroon. That was, I think her first book came out maybe in the 90s. And I think my mom did it. And so I always thought that was very cool. So that's one way that I try to stay sane and throughout this time. And then the things that bring me joy right now are being out and being able to film again. Because for a while we were a bit more sequestered. And so now we are filming a bit more since we've got more vaccines around.
That's great. I'm going to take on to this with a couple follow-up questions before I lose them. So share a little more about your role and your work as it relates to the filming and being out and making stories. And then with the free writing, do you ever go back and look at that free writing?
No, that's a great question. I never go back and look at the writing because it's all, I mean, I think it would make less sense than my dreams make, you know, like I have the weirdest dreams and I'm sure this writing is even stranger than those. So I don't look at them, but it just helps me center for the day when I do that practice. And as far as my role and what I do, technically my title is I'm called a producer at the television station. However, the producer, that title means different things in different industries and even from station to station. So my role is really more of a director. If that role makes more, that title makes more sense, but in television at our station, a television director is something else. It's someone that actually literally calls the shots during live television shows and is in a studio. However, for my intents and purposes, almost all of my filming is done, we say, in the field or not in a studio setting. So for example, some of you guys might have heard when you join the call, Dr. John Hallberg and I are working on a show together, which I'm sure we will talk about. And a couple of the places that we're filming are Regents Hospital. We're going to be filming in their Sim Center. We're going to be filming at the West Broadway Clinic, the Southern Theater. So all of that is considered in the field. And while I'm in the field, I'm literally directing the cameras of where to go, listening for things. If it's an interview situation, do I need to get somebody to begin that sentence again so that I have a clear beginning to a sentence, a clear end to a sentence? And prior to going out into the field, I've written a treatment, which is just the television version of an outline. So I've written how I want things to look, how I want them to hear a sound, and then my shot list of going out. So I kind of prep ahead of time and then try to do those things in the field. And then we bring it back to edit. And I also edit.
Fabulous. That's super great. Interns, I'm hopeful that you're starting to see how a team, and perhaps a non-traditional way when we think about healthcare teams, is forming here, where Brittany is providing a really crucial role. And without John, this show wouldn't happen. Without her, this show wouldn't happen. And so as we think about the teams that you're a part of and that you will be a part of, really let this, hopefully these stories expand your mind on what's possible. John, what brings you joy these days? How do you take care of yourself? And then give us the story of how you got into the creative arts as a doc.
Oof. All right. How am I taking care of myself? I am trying to go to bed at a reasonable time. I just have to like stop doing things at a certain point. As many of you may know, we're all on electronic medical records. It never stops. It won't stop until I retire, and probably years and like months into retirement when it finally like slows down. I like to say that if you know the Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, when Marley first presents himself to Scrooge, these chains behind him, he's dragging these chains and these, you know, I forged these chains in life. And I feel like those are patient charts. Like, I just feel like I am kind of trudging through life, one step at a time with like the weight of my patience. And then that may sound horrible, but it's just like a sense of responsibility. It's like my connectedness. And I've been doing this for 26 years. I've been a physician post-residency. So I'm taking care of some people I delivered, you know? So I've got like 26-year-olds that I delivered at one point. It is a deep, deep responsibility, but also a love. So I have that, but I have to turn it off. I have to go to bed at a certain time. I read an analog book. I don't read an ebook or anything like that. I read an analog book with light reflecting off the pages. I go to sleep. I wake up. I do the New York Times mini. That's my new thing. I during the pandemic, there's the at home section that was coming in the New York Times on Sunday. I loved it, and I started doing crossword puzzles. I've also realized that I can do one weekday puzzle, which is Monday. It's the easiest of the week. I don't even try and do them past that. I just do Monday. It's like this sort of sense of satisfaction. I can get that done. I walk my dog. And which is germane to this conversation, I have become such a huge fan of the phenomenal TV that's out there. I almost hate to even call it TV. The series that we're watching, they're like just movies that go on for days. And I have become like addicted to good film, good television. Then I try and walk my dog. I've got this dog I'm absolutely head over heels in love with. It's a Shepherd Doodle. It's a German Shepherd and Doodle, a poodle. I never thought I'd be a poodle guy, but I'm a poodle guy. I just love my dog to death, and my wife too, I should say, and my adult children. So all of that, is there. Brittany and I both, by pure chance, went to St. Olaf College. I was in the St. Olaf band. I met my wife in the band. I think, and the reason I mentioned this is just that I knew I was going to go to medical school, or wanted to go to medical school. I wanted to become a physician, but I didn't know it at the time, but I became amazed at how important the arts were to my life, to my sustenance, to my creative expression. And I never in a million years would have thought that there was a way to combine medicine and the arts. And I've done it in a lot of different ways, and I'll just gloss over them, but I take care of a really large number of creative people in town. So I take care of many actors and musicians, not dancers so much, it's kind of a niche within the dance community, but visual artists, writers, poets. That's a big part of my population. They inspire me, they feed my curiosity. You can imagine we have some really interesting conversations in the exam rooms. I get on tangents all the time. My scribe probably just rolls her eyes every time I start talking about someone's latest publication or their poem that I saw in the New Yorker or whatever, but it's just like so rich, and I just feel so connected. I help design the clinic that I'm in now. It's a way of manifesting my love of the arts into something that actually has real implication, you know, in the sense like this is a physical space that people come in, and it's filled with art and it's filled with light. And it's just, I'm so proud of that. And then what we did here has been applied to the Broadway Family Medicine Clinic that's in our group, caring for a largely underserved population. And I love the fact that it reminds us that art is not for the elite. It's not for a particular kind of person. Beauty and light should be available for everybody. It's very democratizing. So I love that fact. And as I mentioned, I'm the creative director of the Center for the Art of Medicine. Dean Tolar wanted to make this happen. Right now, it lives in the medical school. So our responsibility is for medical students, residents, fellows, attendings, community physicians. And yet, of course, we're not an island in and of ourselves. We are constantly part of interprofessional teams and the community and our patients. And one of as a lead up to what Brittany and I do together, let me say this. So 12 years ago, in the back of this clinic space where I'm speaking to you from, we had a bunch of empty space. And to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of our clinic opening, I kind of threw together this show that I called Hippocrates Cafe. And I did it on a Monday night, because actors are free on Monday nights. It's the one day that like musicians and actors are free. They work on the weekends. So it's like the opposite of what we do. You know, we have Friday and Saturday and Sunday, but that's their big working weekend. So Mondays are free. So I worked with three actors who were in A Christmas Carol at that time that I knew. Peter Michael Goetz was here from California. He's been in some Hollywood films. He was playing Scrooge. Threw the show together. We called it Influenza. And we use sort of prose and poetry and Adelaide's Lament from Guys and Dolls about, you know, wheezing and sneezing and all of that. And just kind of had this fun evening of laughter. And there was a seed there of a show that within about two shows of that night became a thing. And so for the last 12 years, I've done 115 live shows called Hippocrates Cafe. Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Stanford University, Minnesota State Fair, to audiences of 12 to as large as 1,000, and exploring healthcare topics using the written word and music. And the very last show that I did was on Friday, March 13th, 2020, at the Minnesota Museum of American Art for colleagues of mine who are in a leadership program called the Rothenberger Leadership Academy through the medical school. And it was called In the Time of Plague. And I knew kind of what was coming, or we knew some degree what was coming. And that was my last live show to this day, by the way. I haven't done another live show since. And then during the pandemic, Dean Tolar and Tim Shacker, our vice dean for research in the medical school, wanted me with the new center to do something to honor the frontline healthcare workers. And this is so crazy to think that in June 2020 and then in July, we are getting pressure to hurry up, guys, got to create something. This pandemic might be done pretty soon, and we don't want to lose the ability to thank our colleagues. We got to get this going. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I was introduced to Brittany, and I don't want to keep talking, so I'll stop. But just to say that every once in a while, I hope that all of you in your professional lives are connected to somebody in a different career path or a different line of work. And you start having this conversation and you suddenly realize like, oh my God, I'm having a mind meld. I've had this with two architects who helped design the clinic in different phases, and with Brittany. It's really rare in life to have that, but when it happens, it sounds goofy, but like magic happens, something miraculous, something amazing happens. And I hope, I really, really firmly say this and mean this, I hope all of you have experiences in your careers where you have these opportunities or these moments that sort of happen. How in the world did this happen? Or how do we meet at this point in time that just something magic happens?
That's really great, John. As you were sharing that, I had an experience come to my mind, and perhaps others did, that we could certainly share. I'm going to go to Colton's question to you in the chat box. We want to know what you mean by good film, and certainly some of your favorite shows right now. We'll just see if we're on the same page about that. And then I'll go back over to Brittany.
So if I go back to the beginning of the pandemic, I was watching, I'm a huge HBO fan, and forgive me, I have not seen The Wire yet, but I'm going to. But, I love Band of Brothers. That I was a kid living in Belgium post-World War II. Those guys that, Easy Company, the 101st, every place they went in that series is a place that I've been. I spent the summer in Normandy 1 year. I mean, it goes on and on. And that kind of filmmaking, that kind of storytelling just does something for me. So my wife and I watched My Brilliant Friend, that is set in around Naples in the 1950s. So we watched that. That led to, I had missed the whole Schitt's Creek thing. So we started watching Schitt's Creek, which is not exactly high film, but it was like, oh my gosh, what a, they're stuck in a motel. We're stuck at our hotel, our home, or we're stuck in a clinic. That resonated with me. But more recently, Mayor of Easttown. Just the list goes on. It's like if it's really, considered high. Well, I'm watching Dopesick right now, which is really something on Hulu, because that begins in 1996. That's the year that my son was born, and that's my first year of practice in medicine. And I was totally in that whole thing. Like, we're under treating pain. It's the fifth vital sign. Are you green, happy, smiley face? Or are you red, frowny, unhappy face? And, we need to give you OxyContin. And to this day, I deal with that. In the fallout of that. So that's probably the most, kind of bookending that year and a half experience there. So, and then just watched Passing on Netflix the other night. I'm a huge sucker for anything black and white. Is it Paderewski who did the Cold War film, and then he did Ida? If any of you have seen those two, these black and white Polish films, I'm just like, I'm in love with the cinematography in those. So just a few examples.
Great, thank you. Brittany, a little bit about your journey, as I'm thinking about many of these folks here in the health sciences. We pick our profession, we pick our discipline. We're not sure where our journey will take us. You chose yours, you had a reason for it. Just want to share a little bit about your journey.
Yes, I'm sure none of us, or maybe we have had straight line journeys. Mine has not been a straight line to doing what I'm doing now. As Dr. Hallberg mentioned, I went to St. Olaf and I studied dance and African studies, not two very common majors at St. Olaf, known for music and the sciences. But then another passion of mine is culture and studying abroad. So I went into the study abroad industry after that for a couple of years. And then the recession hit. I was new to that industry and they laid off 40% of our staff. So when that happened, then I started to reevaluate, okay, what is it that I really want to do? And a lot of my time, both of my parents are educators and artists. And so, and growing up, I was always in the arts, either on stage myself or working on shows. And then when I went to college, I also worked at a concert venue that we had on campus and was bringing bands in to perform and worked on a ton of shows there. And I love story. I love telling stories. I love working with a group of people and creating something from nothing. Like that, it's not beautifully said, but that is what I love to do. I love creating things with people. And so because of that, then I ended up thinking about television. Even though I didn't have experience in television, you know, everything that I learned in choreography was very similar to what I do. I mean, anything that I'm doing in terms of story, am I changing the speed of it? Am I changing the tempo? Am I changing the level, you know, literal and metaphorical? All of the tools of choreography are the same in terms of television. And so I ended up getting an internship at TPT and, you know, I was teaching dance and I was, you know, waitressing and doing 7 million things. And then I eventually joined the staff a few months later, and I've been there now for 10 years. And I've worked on many different shows, and but they've all had a common theme of documentary storytelling. So that is my non-circuitous way to get to television. But I made movies all the time growing up. Like that is just something where I would go to my teachers in middle school and say, will you give me extra credit if I make a movie about this? And, you know, that was not an option. They weren't like, yes, who wants to make a movie and get credit about it? But they let me. You know, my poor classmates had to watch all of those films that I made. So that's all I think about is like, I'm so sorry I did that to all of them, but not really, because it was so much fun. So that's how I got into storytelling.
Fabulous. And which of you or both of you, would you just love to share a little bit about how you are working together and perhaps some of the joys of that, the challenges of it, and the impact you think you're having on society?
Wow. Brittany, why don't I go first with this? Because I think it'd be a nice segue to you after it. So first of all, let me just say, I didn't know any of that about Brittany. I mean, we've been working together like a lot for the last like 15 months, but we were thrown together. And there was never like, hey, hi, tell me your story. You know, we're just like thrown in and we had to make this thing and make art. Let me back up just a little bit too. So I did a show at Plymouth Congregational Church in, I think it was October or November of 2019. And it was done for the Mortality Project at that church. And it was basically kind of, you know, it was a show called A Celebration of Life. And it was done in their little chapel. And they had my colleague, who's a physician actor, Mark Nelson, his wife, Shelley, who's at the Guthrie, and a couple of musicians. And we just sort of explored death and sort of end of life. And it was this really beautiful show. It was really one of like, every once in a while you create something, you don't think much of it at the time. And then you realize like, oh my God, that was like, we just knocked that out of the park. That was like a really thoughtful show. So one of the people that was in attendance at that is a guy named Tom Olson. And Tom and his wife Tom's on the board of UMP, of the physician group. He made a substantial donation to our clinic to make it, the expansion happen. He was in attendance at that. And then after that little show, and it was, you know, we had, I don't know, 40 people in the audience. He sent me an email saying, you know, John, I just, you know, and he came up to me after that show, he had tears in his eyes. He thought it was just so beautiful. And he sent me an email a few weeks later saying, I just keep thinking about that show. And I keep thinking like, that needs to have a bigger audience than what you gave it. Have you ever thought about, you know, do you think we could like do it at TPT, like just go to the studio, film it and put it out there so people can have access to it? And I said, well, that's a cool idea. So I reached out to Sylvia. Brittany, I'm blanking on Sylvia's last name. Sylvia Strobel. So a classmate of mine at Samuel, if I never really knew her while we were students together, but she became an arts attorney, you know, specializing in artists and their, you know, legal needs and copyright and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she sent me a very polite response back, like, oh, that sounds good. We'll have to talk about that someday. And then just kind of tuck that away. Then the pandemic hit. And then I got this pressure from the deans at the medical school to create something. I thought, you know, what if we did a Hippocrates Cafe show about the pandemic and we film it instead of trying to do it live? We can't do it live. So let's film it. And so I reached back out to Sylvia. Sylvia put me in touch with Pam McClanahan, I think is probably the order of how things went, Brittany, who then said, I've got just the producer that we need to work with, which was you. And, you know, we had a pretty big Zoom meeting, about as many people in that initial meeting as are on this screen, I think. And then I think, if I'm remembering this correctly, Brittany, you and I just kind of got together, you know, as a Zoom. And I had all these ideas of a show on blue note cards, like all these pieces. I've been sort of curating in my head pieces that might be useful to put in a show at some point. And then we just started talking. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we had kind of some ground rules. And this is maybe that first meeting we had with the whole group. But it was like, whatever we create, especially about the pandemic, it's got to be beautiful. It's got to be meaningful and reflective and kind of slow. And it needs to be non-prescriptive. All the shows that I did, that 115 shows, there's nothing about them that says that, you know, thou shalt or you should do this. It's storytelling, which, by the way, for any of us in healthcare, it's what we do all the time. I mean, I tell people I get paid to listen to stories. I'm a family physician. Every day I'm in clinic, people are telling me stories. I'm asking them, and you know, nudging them to tell me more about their lives and more about their stories. So I had this show in mind, Hippocrates Cafe. And by the way, it looks like a tasting menu. It's like lots of little written and you know, red pieces. Music serves as little like sorbet. I like to think of like little palate cleansers between the different courses. And then in the course of an hour, you've kind of explored the brain or dementia or cancer or heart disease in some kind of meaningful way. That's not like, hey, you know, we've got to lower that LDL level with a statin and we got to maximize that dose. And, you know, you need to exercise X number of minutes a day. No. It's more like, what does it feel like to have a heart attack? What does it feel like this beautiful poem about, like, everything was perfect about this person, but for one little tiny clot in their coronary artery that says volumes about the human condition in a way that, a New England Journal treatise could not do. So with that, with these ideas, you know, I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but as we're like having that meeting and we're talking about this, what were you thinking? Like, were you thinking like, oh my God, what is this guy talking about? I don't know if I've ever really asked you that, but you seem to get it almost like right away.
No, I never was like, what is this guy talking about? And probably again, because I was raised in the arts and, you know, and I worked on an arts show at TPT that was called Minnesota Original for 8 years. And so I was constantly talking with artists and getting to film their work in our communities. So I also just love the arts and think that they can be a really powerful tool for connecting people. So I think that that very symbiotic relationship helped us in this project from the get-go. Most great. Definitely.
That's great. And,
yeah. No, go ahead, Carolyn. Sorry.
No, it's great. I'm going to pause and see if any of the interns want to ask a question at this point about anything you've heard so far.
I'm wondering if both of you could speak a little bit more to how you chose the stories. Like, I was enamored with the person who was going from free little library to free little library and like creating community connection that way. And it also just seemed like there was so much intentionality to not have it be from only one lens and to have so many lenses of experience represented. So I would just love to hear more about how you thought about that together and what that process looked like.
Well, let me start, because Brittany, I think you're gonna be able to add so much like connective stuff to this. So so my shows, you know, by pure, cost. I never charged for my services. So when I would do these shows, I would just say, look, this is part of my outreach as a University of Minnesota faculty member. Just a quick aside for any of you who like thinking about academia, I mean, I've actually been able to carve my career, and I'm going for full professor this year. I've never technically had a peer-reviewed publication, if you can believe that. But I worked with NPR for 18 years, 650 appearances, Hippocrates Cafe, 115 shows. I've made that public engagement my scholarship in a very unique way. And so I just want to also put that out there, just as like, you know, there is such a publish or perish kind of mentality. And it's like we live and die by the written word and the peer-reviewed publication. I was able to convince the P&T committee, the Promotion and Tenure Committee, that my NPR spots were peer-reviewed. Now, the peers were editors and news people, not other physicians per se, although, you know, I'd keep examples of feedback that I'd get and accolades and whatever. But anyway, I really have made this a big, you know, part of what I do. So the shows then by, you know, I'd have like six people max, five people usually, me, two actors, two musicians. The show, I charge $250 per person on stage. So shows, do the math, they're like typically like maybe $1,200 and or maybe $1,500. I would get a sound person. I also, Brittany can, I'm sure, speak to the fact that nothing wrecks a show faster than sound or audio that isn't working. You've all been at conferences and there's feedback and you're like plugging your ears and it's like, oh my God, this is horrible. It's like claws on a, you know, a fingernails on a blackboard or something. It's just a disaster. So I decided early on, there's no way I'm doing a show without my sound guy. So that became a part of it. But as you can imagine, even if I had like two people of color on stage with me, I'm really limited. I've got five people or six people. One of the most revelatory things with the show that we did, and for those of you who've seen it, you know this. If you haven't seen it, I hope you see it and you'll realize, like, my gosh, you know, we had so many folks with so many different voices, so many different stories to tell. Now, my lens was, so Tara, you were referring to Kevin Kling. Kevin Kling is actually one of the nation's, I mean, he's a Minnesota treasurer. He's actually one of the nation's great storytellers. And he is just amazing. And Brittany, I think we decided early on, like he just needed to be the cold open. He just needed to kind of open the show. And then the music you hear is from the Cafe Accordion Orchestra, and that accordion and music that, for whatever reason, I think maybe living in Belgium as a kid, I have this kind of gypsy jazz French cafe thing is kind of like, you know, Hippocrates Cafe. I want to have cafe music. So the Cafe Accordion Orchestra opened the show and then it kind of fades away. And then Kevin's telling his great story. So I had some people in mind, you know, T. Michael Rambo singing with Robert Bell. That was a piece we'd done in many of my shows. Dan Newton, Pat Donahue, you know, hello in there, John Prine. I'd work with those guys in a number of shows. So I had my favorites, but to be quite honest, I was sort of limited in terms of the breadth. And I think this is where I'll stop. And then Brittany, this is where you came in, is we're kind of going through the pieces, we're shuffling the cards, we're creating the order of the show. You, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but this must be your background in the arts and knowing the community. You have these brilliant ideas of all these other storytellers to invite.
Well, and I will say that Dr. Hallberg has, I mean, he's done so many shows that he has a really strong curatorial sense and knows curation and also knows how to develop a show. We had different sections of the show where we kind of started out, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic and talking about, you know, honoring Dr. Van Leon, who was the first ophthalmologist, I think, or optometrist who ended up, ringing the alarm bells about COVID. And then he ended up passing from it. So starting there and then kind of going through different stages of it, talking about a lot of aggression against Asian Americans during the pandemic. And because of my work with Minnesota Original, the arts show, I have been able to meet a lot of different artists. And so okay, great. Let's reach out to Sun Yung Shin because I saw a piece that can really talk about that part of it. Or let's talk to Kalkalia Yang because I love her. And oh my gosh, she's a great writer. You know, so tried to center it that way. And then we moved on in the program to kind of talk about loneliness, because loneliness was such a hallmark of what we were feeling and people are still feeling right now. And then also bringing in, you know, George Floyd and his murder happened. And obviously, you know, being in Minnesota, we felt that so enormously in our own communities. And so bringing in that a little bit through some of the storytelling as well was really important to us. And then also wanting to end the show with, there is still some hope because we're, you know, as you guys know from being in the healthcare industry, and my sister-in-law is an ICU nurse and has been working those incredibly long shifts and losing people so often, more often than I can. I mean, I just cannot imagine her strength and the strength of everyone in the industry. But hearing those stories over and over and over, and knowing we needed to also end with some lift. And Dr. Hallberg knew Nachito Herrera, who is a really accomplished jazz and classical pianist. And he had this story about waking up from this coma 14 days into his coma after, you know, they thought they were going to lose him. And then the first thing he asks for is a keyboard, and he writes this song. And knowing we wanted to end with that bit of hope that his story brought. So I think there, you know, the one thing that you mentioned is kind of that building of a show can be very important for how an audience receives information and experiences it. And so moving things around is a challenge always, to try to, what is the perfect order? Because information and stories can be heard differently when you frame them by different pieces in different ways. And one other thing I've learned from my storytelling and from choreography as well, and perhaps you guys have learned in many different ways, is you can have, even though ours is kind of a variety show because we're showcasing so many different kinds of things and stories, if you don't have that connective tissue, then all you have is variety and you don't have a story. You just have different scenes. And so part of the challenge for us is to figure out, how can we connect these elements, whether it's visually, you know, ending a piece, having a family all together, and then starting the next piece with a family all together, and then going into portraits of families, you know, things like those little visual cues, and then also in any narration or voiceover that you do, what is that connective tissue? Because that will bring someone along a journey versus plop them in and out every time. And so I think transitions are the most important part and also the hardest.
Thanks. Thanks to both of you. One of the questions that had come ahead of time was about storytelling, which you have obviously dove into. The question really revolved around the power of storytelling as it relates to health. And then, of course, storytelling being a competency that is not taught in the traditional health sciences, really. We might have practice with a policy brief. That is not the same thing. We might talk about balancing our quantitative data with a qualitative story, but even that is not at all similar to what each of you has been sharing with us this evening. Any reflections on storytelling as a competency and how these interns might build some of those skills? And then I'll add a follow-up question that was asked. Was there a skill early on you wish you would have invested some time in developing that these guys might think about?
So let me just, you know, like loving story, hearing people's stories. You know, I don't think myself as a storyteller. I'm not a writer. Part of it's just time-based. Say this, I mean, I think, you know, starting as a medical student, I never stopped reading novels. I never stopped going to films. I mean, I remember I lived at Phi Chi. So if any of you know, like the corner of Delaware Street and Harvard Street, there's the Grace University Lutheran Church right there in the shadows of Moose Tower and PWB. I was across the street in that house. And two blocks down, which is now a condo building, I think, there was the Oak Street Cinema. And I mean, I thought I had like almost died and gone to heaven, because I could go on a Friday night, two blocks down an alley, and go see, you know, Thin Blue Line, The Last Temptation of Christ, The Mission. I mean, I think of all these movies that came out in the late 80s, early 90s that were just amazing cinematic experiences. Do the Right Thing. You know, I saw that twice. I was actually at the U Film Society back in the day, when the Bell Museum, the old Bell Museum by the Armory. those things in some ways were as important or more important to my mind than my histology exam coming up. You know, I don't mean to discount that. It's just that I'm taking care of people. I'm taking care of human beings. They're from all over the world. I can't travel all over the world, but I can if I go see this Iranian film at the U Film Society with my Iranian dental student colleagues and have a conversation with them afterward about what was it like to grow up in Tehran in 1979 or 80. You know, I've always felt that the arts have made, hands down, 100%, have made me a better physician and a better listener and a person who's more empathetic and caring to my patients. So there's like that necessariness of storytelling. And then I'm in this office space in my clinic tonight because in our conference room where normally I'd be, Ben Trepe is here, and he is my colleague in the Center for the Art of Medicine. And he is our kind of one of our three lead storytelling physicians. And he's with medical students right now, crafting stories and working on stories. And it's no accident that JAMA, the third most prestigious medical journal in the world, has a section every week called A Piece of My Mind. And they also have viewpoint sections. And I think that the big public health journal, it's like there's a whole narrative matters, story matters, essentially, right? You know, can you base government policy on someone's story? Well, people try. That's not effective. But you do need stories to kind of further your tale. You know, I think that what Brittany and I did by creating this gorgeous, if I may say, cinematic variety show, showcasing all these amazing people, showcasing some of the best artists that Minnesota has to offer in the written and sung and performed, you know, way that they did. If somebody, I don't know, someplace around the country stumbles upon that show and they're kind of an anti-vaxxer, or they are actually, you know, bigoted, or they are racist, and for some reason they stumble upon it and they watch it, and there's something that happens as they're hearing that gentle story that's not accusatory, that's not finger pointing, that's not in a raised voice. And it does something to change their attitude. Or someone's lost somebody and they come upon that bouquet poem that we did, that we filmed over in Hennepin County, and it brings tears to their eyes. We've succeeded, right? I mean, I think that through that visual storytelling and the spoken word piece, or just the music that's playing, you know, we've done something really powerful that doesn't happen. You know, I think of my clinical care as micro medicine. When I'm seeing a patient one after the other, it's just one person or one family after the other. But when I did my NPR work, that's like 34,000 people. Or I have no idea, now that our show has been picked up nationally, it's been in 25 states, you can stream it online, who knows how many people we're reaching. It's really fun, and it's kind of fun to amplify that. So I think that like this beautiful thing we created has now kind of this life of its own. Ben Trepe, who's here tonight, he wrote a piece of my mind called Running on Fumes last September about burnout during COVID. It's one of the top 5% articles ever accessed on JAMA. Clearly he hits a nerve, you know, that people resonated with, this little beautiful private quiet story that he wrote. So anyway, that's how I kind of reconcile this, or why I feel that the storytelling piece is so important, why we have a center in the medical school, the Center for the Art of Medicine, that's going to have a focus on storytelling. That's where I'm coming from. And Brittany, my gosh, I mean, this is what you do, which is such a, I keep pinching myself. Like, I get to work with somebody who gets to do this for a living. Like, this is what Brittany does, you know, every time she's, you know, on the set or thinking about these things.
I do feel very lucky that I get to tell stories for a living, or that I get to help tell other people's stories. Cause mainly I am, you know, trying to amplify other people's stories. And even though I can bring my creativity into it, it's so much of like stripping away my own bias or my own lens and trying to have them reveal their story so that others can hear it in the best way possible. And I think that, you know, I agree with Dr. Hallberg and what he has said so much about stories as well, of just, they have a way, a power to connect us. And I feel the most excited I feel are when people think that if I've helped capture their story in an authentic way, which means I've really listened to them. I'm hearing them. And then when we get feedback from audiences that say those things, that this influenced me, or this helped me through something, or, you know, another show I work on, someone said, I did not know how to make, in this case, it was steam buns. I did not know how to make steam buns because my mom passed before she could teach me how to do this. And seeing this other woman from my cultural background making them now gives me that opportunity. And you're just like, oh, well, that's why I tell stories. And that's why I want to share things, because I want people to be able to connect, even if it's a connection of, oh, I see that person, I hear what they're saying, maybe they're not so different than me. You know, that's a great kind of connection. Or these are all people in my own community, I'm getting to know my neighbors more, essentially. Or maybe it takes someone out of their comfort zone and helps them go to something that they wouldn't, whether it's an arts event or a new restaurant, or helps expand their world. And I think so much for me during the pandemic was, you know, in my attic and just being here and trying to think, how can I see new places? Where can my curiosity go if it's just within these walls? And I think that story really helped me with still feeling curious and still getting out of my walls, if that makes any sense at all.
I love it. I think it does. Folks are resonating. And John, I appreciate you giving the example of your own lived experience as a student, not losing sight of the arts or of some of these hobbies. We admit a lot of graduate students, including many of the ones here tonight, because you present to us with varied interests, right? And we look at that when we accept you, and then you get into this narrow a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years of, I need to learn this and this and this. And a lot of those other passions are put off to the side. And if you're hearing a few things tonight, one of them should be, don't let that happen. Don't let those things just go off to the side. They're important to who you are as a human being and to the work that that's in front of you someday. Yep. I really like that. Taylor, go ahead and ask your question about some of these shows.
Yeah, thank you both. It's been great to just like listen in tonight. But I was wondering, how can we watch the show is it possible? And then also, what's kind of next in the future? Are you going to be doing more shows? And
I'll put a link in the chat. And Dr. Hallberg, do you want to talk about the next show?
Absolutely. So Taylor, like that was like the perfect question. Thank you so much. So if you folks didn't know this, so our show premiered September of 2020. It was, on broadcast right after that and well received. We submitted it for consideration of national distribution, and it was picked up. It was American Public Television is the sort of the, Brittany, is it the carrier? Is that how you would, is that the right word to use for that? So it's sort of distributor.
Yeah, they're a distributor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been, I like to say, from California to Maine and Alaska to Florida, if you kind of look at the crisscrossing of the country. It's a big pocket in the deep south that is not carrying the show, however. So we got to work on that. But so based on that, I think was it Adam, Brittany, that when we were watching one of the versions of like the kind of early on, not maybe midway through like the cuts and the edits and things. And I think Adam, Brittany's boss, said like, oh my gosh, this is like so beautiful. And then especially toward the end, he was saying that he was almost crying watching, like he's the editor, or he was like doing some of the editing, I think, at home. And he was actually getting kind of choked up with a lot of the different pieces of it. And that as a creator made me so happy that someone's getting choked up. And I think he said something, and whether he should have or not, he just said, I think this is sort of, Brittany, I may be misremembering it, but that it was sort of award-winning. It had an award-winning quality to it or something like that. The minute he said that, it's like, oh, this has to go on. So Brittany, you submitted it for consideration of an Emmy. And then it has to be sort of go through some process to be nominated for an Emmy, then receive an official nomination. And then on October 9th, we found out that we won a regional Emmy for the show. And if anyone ever said to me, John Hallberg, future family physician, that at some point in your life, you are going to be an Emmy winner, I'd say, oh, shut the, you know what? I never would have believed it. And I have to say, it's like a bucket list thing that I never knew existed. But now I'm so jazzed. And I should just, if it's not clear already, I mean, I love film more than just about any art form, because it's photography, it's acting, it's lighting, it's good writing. It's like everything I love about the arts put into one. And I'm not gonna be a filmmaker, but to work with Brittany and have, and truly, and I really mean this, if that show has any kind of like look to it, it is Brittany's doing. I mean, in terms of how that came together. And it's just like such like this crazy idea made manifest. It's just like, what a gift. And so it's just this great thing. So I don't recall exactly when it was in this process, but it was last year. You know, TPT came forward and said, you know, based on the success of this, we would like to do a limited series of three more shows. And so we are, how would you say, Brittany, deep in pre-production at this point with our next show. And two things are worth mentioning. So I love Hippocrates Cafe. I love everything about it. Trouble is, most of the public does not know how to pronounce Hippocrates. And if you were to guess how they mispronounce it, if you think it's hypocrites, you are correct. So being introduced as Dr. John Hallberg in his Hippocrates Cafe, it's like, oh no, that is just bad. You can't do that. And people don't know. It's like, if they're looking through their program, like Hippocrates Cafe, is this a Greek dining facility or something? So we are working on a name change for the series. It makes me a little bit sad, but it needs to happen. And Hippocrates Cafe Productions is going to be like a production kind of arm of what we do. That will live in the show and will probably be a title slide. So that's going to be kind of my thing. And maybe my act two when I quit medicine might be to do, you know, producing things. And so I might take that with me, and that might be something that I do in act two or act three of my career. But anyway, our next show, whatever the overarching title is, so we're going with Reflections On. It's kind of the constant thing. So Reflections On the Pandemic. The next one's gonna be Reflections On Race. And we are specifically, because we're in the medical school, and this is just only because of that fact, we're really focusing on BIPOC physicians, knowing full well there can be an entire show about BIPOC nurses or BIPOC public health officials or dentists or vets or, you know, pharmacists. I mean, the list goes on, but we're starting because we know that these folks, I mean, they're my colleagues. So we're starting with this show. The next one will be Reflections on Aging. And then the third show is gonna be Reflections on Disability. And then who knows where we'll go from there, but that's too far ahead to think. But right now, Brittany was just, some of you jumped on the call as we were kind of waiting. We are starting filming next Tuesday. So, and by we, I mean Brittany is starting filming next Tuesday. But we've been having like these 1 hour meetings, 1.5 hour meetings for weeks, if not months now, kind of putting this together. And this is gonna be the most, as you can imagine, I mean, and to be quite honest, if you look at me and you look at Brittany, we are not in a position to be doing a show about BIPOC physicians. So we need colleagues of color to be really helping us shape this show. So we're going to be leaning on Dean Ana Nunez, who's in the medical school, to kind of help up with our script writing a little bit. And I'm meeting with Saganish Salamiab, who is Ethiopian, who I've known since she was in medical school. She's been a co-host with me of the show. And it's just been great. And so it's going to be a fantastic show. And then once, so we're filming through December, and then Brittany, you're going to disappear. You're going to do your magic for what, 2 months?
I'm like disappearing next Tuesday. I've got all these post-it notes up here of all the different things that we're filming. And then we'll be editing in January and February, and then it will air in March or April, TBD on the air date, but then it'll also be on tpt.org as well as broadcast and on YouTube. So yeah, gearing up for all of that. And there's some exciting new things with this. You know, we're using a teleprompter, which I don't know if you guys have used a teleprompter before, but it's not a common skill to have used a teleprompter. So I'm a little nervous and anxious about how everyone's going to do with a teleprompter as they're reading these beautiful stories that they've written. But I've got I've got lots of tricks up my sleeve. So I think it'll turn out beautifully.
Well, can we share a little secret? So if you watch the show and you're watching me and Renee Critchlow as hosts, so we did not have a teleprompter for that, for our scripting. We call it like the connective tissue of the show. We were at the, people always say, where did you film that? And all those really cool rough scenes, that was Aria. That was the former Jean Lune space in North, back in my day was called the Warehouse District. Now it's North Loop. And Jean Lune is a theater company that does not exist anymore. They sort of exist as the moving company. And this is an old warehouse building, but it was the perfect place to film many of those scenes. Well, Renee Critchlow and I got there and we had no teleprompter. I did not have my lines memorized. So Brittany, thank you, would hold 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper with we tried to do the biggest font we could do and print. And you were holding it under the lens of the camera. And then you'd be dropping one page and then having the next page. And it was kind of funny actually. And we somehow got through it, but it was probably soon after that, I said, Brittany, if we do this again, if we're so lucky to do this again, we probably need to have a teleprompter, good as your skills were, but.
We were also, since it was the beginning part of the pandemic, the station would only allow us to have 3 crew members on set. So we could not have another person, but yes, we're very thankful this time that we can have teleprompters. Yeah.
Well, and Renee and I are awkwardly standing 6 feet apart, even though we're
right.
So there's this stuff it was a pandemic. We didn't have vaccination. We, a couple of the people that were singing, we got testing done, even though it was hard to come about testing even back then, but we did it. It's T. Michael, we should probably test you to make sure that you are not transmitting any aerosols that are, COVID virus. So anyway, a little bit of the sausage making of a show that's kind of fun to pull back the curtain on a little bit.
I love it. Thank you. I think some of the interns will eagerly go and absorb some of the shows for sure. Thank you again for your time and energy with us this evening. I think the interns, you have some things to reflect on, and I'm grateful for the stories you shared this evening, for the journeys you've had that you've been willing to share. Think about the hobbies and the things outside of your programs that you should be investing a little bit of time in. Think about free writing, see how that goes. I had someone say to me, write with your dominant hand, do that free flow thinking, or writing, not so much thinking, and then write with your non-dominant hand, which taps into your emotional side. Well, I have to say I did it once and I was writing maybe 3 words with my left hand. I just start crying, for no reason that I consciously knew. So there's these tips, these things that you can try. Just think about how you're balancing your lives these days and know that you have fans and you have cheerleaders here that will encourage you and be resources to you. And I think John and Brittany should know that if they need an intern squad, I think we have some candidates that would be happy to help with probably almost anything, including holding on to 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper. Yes. And with that, we'll close the session. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Let us know what you gained from this conversation by writing a quick review. Please share this podcast with others, subscribe for future conversations, and check out our other episodes. Explore health sciences at the University of Minnesota at health.umn.edu.